Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNRadio.com/Behind the Badge.
Bob Surratt on WGN.
6:39, Monday morning, house call time with Dr. Kevin Mullis from Northwestern Medicine Central DuPage Hospital. Good morning, Dr. Mullis. How are you doing today? I'm late pressing the buttons today. There he is. Hi, Doc.
Hi, Bob. How are you?
Well, I'm happy to report on this story about a second coronavirus vaccine showing early success here in the United States. Moderna talking about a 94.5% effective rate. That's encouraging, isn't it?
That's amazingly encouraging. You know, after last week's news from Pfizer, we were all very happy with, you know, even a 90%. We all have to remember that the FDA was willing to accept anything 50-60%. So for the news this morning coming out of Moderna, that's, you know, outstanding news. And, boy, you just hope this trend continues. You hope that AstraZeneca and you hope that Johnson & Johnson come out with similar numbers. And if that's the case, you're talking about a lot of doses that might be available a lot earlier than we thought.
Do we have any idea of how much these vaccines are going to cost us? Or is it too early for that information?
Well, it's not going to cost us anything. The federal government has already stepped up and has purchased this, and they have said that they will provide it for free to everyone. So that's very good and promising. And I think it's an encouragement to have people not have that as a hurdle as to why not to get the vaccine. So I think it's great that we made that investment as a country. Now it's going to be just the logistics of let's get this in everybody's arm as quickly as we can.
Yeah, and let's feel confident so people take the vaccine, because that's important, isn't it?
100%. You know, so we look at the effectiveness. Then we have to start looking at the side effects and what else happens. So that's what we're doing right now. Pfizer shared a little bit of that last week. You know, it's really good to lead with, the 95-90% effective rate. But then us as clinicians and scientists have to look to say, okay, that's the good part of the story. Now tell us the bad part of the story. Tell us what the side effects were. Tell us how long they lasted. Tell us what they did. And the Pfizer one came out, and, you know, surely there were some people that felt achy, felt like they had a flu for a while, but really not anything more surprising than what we see with the regular flu vaccine. So that's certainly the next thing we're going to be looking at is tell us now, because they're continuing to track, tell us now what people are telling you about how they're feeling and what other side effects they may be having.
We've been hearing about the new stay-at-home restrictions around here, and I heard Dr. Fauci talking about small gatherings of family or friends, and he was saying how those can be even more dangerous than large crowds. Is that because we feel safe and let our guard down with people we know?
100%. You know, we feel very comfortable around people we know. And if you had friends over and you say, gosh, I've known them forever. And, you know, now all of a sudden you get into a social situation in a home where you almost feel uncomfortable wearing a mask, feeling like it's almost rude. So we're seeing, you know, people taking their masks off. And unfortunately, what's happening here is we start to see this positivity rate creep up towards 15-20%. It only takes a small gathering to have one person that's positive. And now when you're in close quarters and not wearing a mask, it's a mini super spreader event is actually what happens there. So we have to really keep our guard up right now as hospitals are really starting to see some increases. So anything we can do in these small social gatherings, and with Thanksgiving just a couple weeks away, that's really probably our biggest concerns.
Northwestern and Stanford just conducted a big study on super spreader events. And from your perspective, Dr. Most, any surprises in the results of that study?
No, not really. I mean, when you look at it, it's kind of interesting how they did it. Predictive modeling. So they're trying to make a prediction. And what they did is they traced people's cell phones, and they looked at three things: where the people went, how long they stayed, and how many other people were at the same place at the same time. So, of course, as we look at this, we look at restaurants, and we look at gyms, and we look at retail. So when you look at some of those and they say, okay, closer quarters, longer period of time, more people, certainly we're going to see that. The nice thing about the study, and it's been validated both at Northwestern and at Stanford, between the two of them, you know, they looked at 10 different cities and 98 million people. So from a predictive modeling point of view, it really was giving some great insight to the government as far as what should we be telling people about stay at home, how big of restaurants, how many capacity should we allow people to have in restaurants. So it's nice using science for that instead of just guessing.
Yeah, I saw where one of the things they reported was reopening a business at 20% of maximum occupancy can cut down on infections by 80% compared with a full reopening. So a lot of businesses looking at that.
Absolutely. And a lot of restaurants looking at that saying, hey, wait a second, if we go back to 25% indoor, you've already shown us the study here. Now, there's a lot of caveats with predictive modeling. One of them is this was done through March, April, and May. What was our positivity rate at that time versus what is it now? So they're rerunning and continuing to run this data. So it'll be interesting to see what the next arm of this data comes out, which will be the summer at our lowest point. And then again, they'll run it again and say what's going on now is we're on the rise. But you've got some brilliant mathematicians and statisticians at both Northwestern and Stanford working on it. And it's nice to know that we're using science and data when we're making decisions on the economy as well as our health.
We had a report early this morning from one of our WGN reporters in Harwood Heights, and they have a testing site there. Starting at 7, they're going to offer COVID tests, and the cars were lined up at 5 in the morning. And that reminds me, I meant to ask you about Elon Musk and how he took those four coronavirus tests on the same day, and two were positive and two were negative. Same machine, same test, same nurse, a rapid antigen test. How does that happen?
Yeah, so we know that the rapid tests are not as accurate as we really, really want them to be. So that's one thing. Two is, if you're on that borderline of positive, negative, certainly you're going to have some that are going to test negative, some that test positive, depending on where you're at of the curve. If you're at the curve on your way up, if he tested today, he might have four positives. If he tests today, but he was on the way out, he may have four negatives. So there certainly will be a time when we're going to be either positive or negative. But we really want to try to identify those people at any time that they may be positive. So there's been other stories of people that say, hey, you know, I tested one side of my nose and it was positive. The other side of my nose was negative. You know, how do things like that happen? And again, the accuracy of this test is being perfected with each time we roll out a new one. But certainly these positives and negatives can happen in some situations, depending on where you're at in the infection.
Continuing with the chief medical officer at Northwestern Medicine Central DuPage Hospital, Dr. Kevin Most. And Doc, you have talked about doing a lot of flying through the pandemic. Do you still feel safe doing that?
I do. I'm flying actually Wednesday. Now I'll, you know, I do all the safety measures that I possibly can. And the nice thing about the airports right now is they're pretty empty. So physically distancing in the airport is not too difficult. The airlines have figured out how to get you on a plane a little bit quicker and with less congestion. And then I double mask on the way up flying. And I really, I only fly to North Carolina, so it's an hour and a half flight. And I really, I don't drink anything. I don't eat anything. So I feel pretty comfortable. That being said, I fly Southwest, where they have the middle seat, middle row open. There's a lot of flights right now on other airlines that are filling the airplanes and flying coast to coast. On those, I probably wouldn't feel comfortable. But on the shorter flights where you know you have some open space, I still feel comfortable.
Should we be wearing eye shields or goggles along with the masks when we fly? What do you think?
Yeah, you know, a lot of people will. Goggles are great. You know, it's there to protect your eye because, unfortunately, this is a virus that when someone coughs or speaks without a mask on, it can certainly get into your eye and you can get infected in that way, which is kind of unusual, but people need to know that. That's why you're seeing all the healthcare workers with shields and goggles on. As far as which is better, you know, the goggles are fine as long as they wrap around the eye and completely protect your eye. A lot of people like the face shield because it's not as restricting and then covers actually your entire face so that you can't almost, stops you from touching your face as well. So really it comes down to comfort, and you probably see a lot of healthcare workers right now wearing both the goggles and the eye shields to protect themselves.
What if you've been in close contact with someone who has COVID, and then after a couple of weeks you get tested? If the test is negative at that point, does that mean you didn't have the virus at all?
Well, Bob, that's a great question that everyone should be really listening, hopefully, to this answer. Because what's happening right now is we have people that have been in close contact and say, oh my gosh, I am going to go get tested today. And they go, and they go to wherever you were talking about, Harwood Heights, or whether it's at the DuPage County, and they were just exposed, and they get in that line, and they test negative, and they feel like, oh, this is good. We have to remember, this disease has an incubation period anywhere from 2 to 7 days. So if you got exposed, you shouldn't get tested the next day. You should get tested somewhere between day 5 and day 7. That'll tell you if you were positive. The scenario you gave, though, is that I'm not going to do anything until a couple weeks later. You could have had the illness, been asymptomatic, and now be over it and test negative. Those individuals who really want to know the answer to that question need to have the blood test done to see if you have antibodies versus doing the nasal swab to see if you actually have the virus antigen.
Right. And then if it turns out that you did have it, you didn't even know it, you did have it, we still don't know if you're going to be immune, do we?
We don't. We know that the immunity is there for a short period of time. Matter of fact, there's a large study going on at Northwestern right now with, I want to say, 20 or 15,000 employees, where we're testing those who were exposed and tested positive or asymptomatic, and we're checking their blood every couple months to see if their immunity is going to stay up. And that hopefully will be published here probably in the next month or so, and it'll be interesting to see what those results show.
If you get the virus and have very mild symptoms, can you still be a long hauler? Could you still have more severe trouble down the road?
Potentially, but most likely not. The asymptomatic people are not going to get, or the mildly symptomatic are going to be like the typical influenza, where they're getting inflammation and causing the symptoms versus this disease and illness, which when it gets into the lungs and the kidneys and the heart, causes damage. And when it gets to the point of causing damage for the long haulers, you're going to have those symptoms be a little bit more than just mild or asymptomatic. So those individuals who got through this with minimal illness and minimal symptoms are actually going to do very well.
Let me get to a few questions from listeners. Dr. Most, I teach preschool and we eat lunch together. I'm in my 60s. I'm concerned that I am at risk. What do you think?
100% you're at risk. Do not. This is an interesting thing that, as we've found in many industries right now, is we protect all the workers while they're on the work site and while they're working, and while they're, whether it be retail or hospitality or whatever, and then we don't realize that when they go back into their break room because they need, you know, to regenerate there, they take their masks off and they're with friends. That is one of the biggest problems. I can tell you here at Northwestern, at each of the hospitals, we've looked at each of the break rooms and have said, no, you can't have 6 people in here anymore. You can only have 2 people in here. So at lunchtime and at break times at this hospital, we have individuals spread out so that we're making sure that they're physically distancing, where they used to have to, I shouldn't say have to, but they used to enjoy getting together and sharing stories and whatever with others. That's one of our biggest concerns, is those 30-minute, 45-minute breaks in close quarters. So please, the school teacher, especially over the age of 60, I hate to say it, vulnerable, be really careful and don't have lunch together.
Wow, this is really my time. My time has come because I'm an antisocial, troubled loner. So this is exactly what I'm designed for. And then quickly, one more question, Doc. Very young children who do well with the virus, we know that, but are they potentially big transmitters of COVID?
We really don't know the great answer for that right now. We know that they are going to be transmitters because especially younger kids who aren't wearing masks, who cough and sneeze and get colds. But we don't know how bad that is because the ones that we've tested, the viral load really varies from kid to kid. So it's really a difficult thing. But just for, you know, parents with young children, just this is a great time to teach them how important it is to wash their hands and to distance and to do all those things. So, and often the young kids, the biggest thing there is keep them away from grandma and grandpa. If they're young kids, chances are the parents are fairly young and would do well. But let's make sure we protect them from those who are vulnerable, even though they want to give them a big hug.
Hey, I'm taking no chances. I'm 6 feet from the phone. Thanks, Doc. Talk to you next Monday morning. Have a good one.
You got it.